Best-selling memoirist and critic Daniel Mendelsohn joins us this morning to discuss his new book, Three Rings, A Tale of Exile, Narrative, and Fate, about the mysterious links between the randomness of the lives we lead and the artfulness of the stories that we tell. Combining memoir, biography, history, and literary criticism, Three Rings weaves together the stories of three exiled writers who turn to the classics of the past to create masterpieces of their own works that pondered the nature of narrative itself. Daniel Mendelsohn is a frequent contributor to The New Yorker and The New York Review of Books, where he is editor at large. His books include the memoirs An Odyssey, A Father, A Son, and An Epic, and The Lost, A Search for Six of 6 Million. He teaches literature at Bard College. He is a great friend of this program, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's always nice to have you on the program. I enjoyed this very much. Give me a sense of how it came about, of what you were thinking about, what mood you were in that brought you to it.
Well, this is a story of, in a funny way, it's a story of how a writer got out of writer's block. It really came out of the writing of my previous memoir, Odyssey, A Father, A Son, and An Epic, which I had a terrible time writing. I couldn't figure out how to organize the story. And so I turned to some other writers who were both interested in the Odyssey and also were interested in how a story should be structured. And so this new book, Three Rings, is sort of the story of how I figured out how to write my last book with the help of these three writers from different eras and different countries.
Why do you think, before you delved into this, why did you think you had trouble writing the book about the Odyssey?
Well, it was actually very interesting. An Odyssey, this book about me and my dad that came out in 2017, sort of had three acts. You know, the first thing that happened was that my father, who was then aged 82, decided to be a student in my first year seminar on the Odyssey at Bard College. And that was an amazing experience, sometimes comical, sometimes irritating, it must be said. And then the next thing that happened is that we went on this cruise that recreated the voyages of the Odyssey. And then the third thing that happened was my dad fell ill and eventually died. And the problem I was having when I was writing the memoir about all this was when I laid it out end to end in the order that I just gave it to you, it wasn't working. It was sort of dead for some reason. It didn't come alive. And that's why I decided I was going to look at some of these other writers who have thought about the Odyssey, thought about different ways of telling stories, and figure out another way to do it. And that's what ended up happening. I started thinking about this technique of storytelling that's used very often actually in Homer's Odyssey, which is called ring composition, where you don't tell a story necessarily in a linear way, but you sort of keep looping back in time and space to tell backstories and backstories of backstories. And once I started thinking about that, I thought if I organized my memoir in the same way, it would suddenly work. And that's just what happened.
So the three rings, what exactly do exile, narrative, and fate have to do with one another, and that you came to those as being the descriptors of the rings?
Mm. Yeah, no, it's an interesting and complicated question. So the three rings of the title refer to the three authors whose work I turned to in my moment of, you know, narrative despair. One of them was the German-Jewish writer and critic and scholar called Eric Auerbach, who wrote a very famous and important study of Western literature. Called My Mises, when he was a refugee from Hitler in the 1930s, and he ran away to Istanbul to get away from the Nazis. And the second was a 17th century French archbishop called François Fénelon, who wrote a kind of fan fiction based on the Odyssey called The Adventures of Telemachus, in which he makes up a whole new series of adventures for the son of Odysseus. And, you know, it's like one of those Star Trek fan fictions where people, you know, write about Spock and Kirk and their afterlife. Well, this is exactly the same kind of thing. And the third of my writers was the wonderful German novelist W.G. Sebald, whose novels explore these sort of Odyssey-like themes of wandering, displacement, exile, yearning for a home that may or may not be there when you get back. And so those are the three rings. Exile, it turns out that all three of these men were either exiled or, in the case of Sebald, self-exiled. Auerbach, obviously, was a refugee. Fénelon was exiled from court because this book that he wrote was perceived as being anti-autocratic, and Louis XIV wasn't happy about it. And Sebald sort of exiled himself from Germany, sort of overwhelmed with guilt about the Second World War. And narrative, obviously, is the element of that ties this whole book together, because all three of these guys were interested in storytelling, how stories are constructed, creating different kinds of stories. And fate is the sort of surprise element, because I'm very interested in coincidence, both in literary narratives and history. And it turns out that all three of these real-life writers were connected in these amazing ways. And it just got me thinking about why things happen in a strange, uncanny way. And so that's what it is about.
I want to explore some of that with you in a moment, and especially the narrative nonfiction part. But in comes a 19th century Turkish translator on the white steed that sort of brings all of this together for the book, but ultimately, I guess, for you as well.
Yeah. So the title of the book, in a funny way, is kind of a wink, because actually there are really four rings, which the reader will soon begin to figure out, because in the 19th century, the Grand Vizier, no less, the Grand Vizier of the Ottoman Empire was a great Francophile, and he translated Fénelon's book into Turkish. And that sort of began a chain of events, I don't want to give too much away, that ultimately connected Fénelon to this Turkish Grand Vizier to Auerbach in a very amazing way. But the reason I included this wonderful figure of Yusuf Kamil Pasha, was the name of this literary politician, is because I'm very interested in what you could call the afterlives of great works.
Right.
You know, and I was very touched to think that, you know, here in the 19th century in Turkey is this wonderful, sensitive, smart Turkish guy who devotes his life to writing a Turkish translation, a French adaptation of Homer's Odyssey. And so I just was so touched by that. And his story is so amazing. And so, you know, a lot of what my new book is about is, you know, I've talked about what these three rings mean, but you could think of rings in the sense of rippling, you know, throw a stone in a pond and the ripples that move outward, you know, and I feel like the Odyssey has created so many ripples. And one of the things I'm interested in doing in this book is exploring the effect it had, not only on these three writers that I talk about, but expanding out in space and time. And so that's why I include the story of this fabulous Yusuf Kamil Pasha.
Daniel Mendelsohn is our guest on the roundtable this morning. The new book is Three Rings, A Tale of Exile, Narrative, and Fate. As I mentioned, you've been on our program many times, and I feel very fortunate to have had you here. But The Elusive Embrace, you wrote about the seductions of narrative, and the, and I know you and I have discussed this, these, the pleasures of a good tale. So how does this, when you're looking at these rings, how does that get in the way of letting the story, which I believe you once described me as you know, letting the story win? How do you allow that to have the story win out while you are dealing with the seductions of narrative?
Yeah, it's such a great question, and it may be an irresolvable question, but you know, I think, and it's, you know, I'm glad you mentioned The Elusive Embrace, my first book, which is now over 20 years ago, in which, you know, I talk about my grandfather and family stories and the way that family histories and family stories shape our expectations of the world and ourselves. And, you know, honestly, Joe, I think all my books are really struggling with this. You know, in my second memoir, The Lost, which is about trying to find out about the fates of my relatives who were killed in the Holocaust, I'm constantly worried about the fact that I'm hijacking their story, basically, that, you know, this tension between this what happened and the story of what happened, and the fact that the story of what happened always necessarily is never equal, you know, to what actually happened. And I guess this new book is really an attempt, and you could also say actually in the third of my narrative nonfictions, the Odyssey book about my dad, it was also about storytelling, the seductions of storytelling, you know, of Odysseus, of course, with the great fabulous and raconteur. And I think in the new book, I'm really foregrounding this issue more than in any other of my books. I'm really putting the question of how do you organize a story so that it is instructive and seductive at the same time. And so, you know, as you know, the book consists of these three main parts, each one dedicated to one of these writers, and each part is a bit of biography, also includes some personal stuff about myself reading these three writers. And so I'm playing with this idea of, you know, how much can you analyze the story without losing the actual charm of the story itself? And it's a risk, because if you overanalyze, the magic disappears, you know. So I hope that doesn't happen in this book. But,
well, no.
You know, that's one of the things I'm interested in.
It doesn't, but it is fascinating, because just by curating what you're telling, and let's say you leave out the repetitions, let's say you leave out the dry and more boring parts, well, that isn't completely true to the narrative, correct? And yet,
right,
it is your curation of it that still allows what you are writing to be truthful and clear.
Right, right. So it's a balancing act, you know. I mean, all of my books also, you know, you're talking about how to sort of balance the analytical parts and, let's call them, the enchanting story parts. You know, in all of my books, I've tried to evolve a style of writing that interweaves, I hope successfully, you know, both personal narrative, rich and interesting tales, which is a word I like, and critical analysis. You know, that was the thing I first embarked on in my first book. And it gets trickier, you know, as I go on to sort of keep the balls in the air. But I'm actually very proud of this new book, because I think of all four of my major, you know, narrative nonfiction works, I think more than any other, I've tried to sort of make it as hard as possible to unweave the critical parts from the personal parts or the narrative parts, because I want people always to be thinking that every story that you enjoy, you know, you need to stop and think, why am I enjoying this? What's happening? What is the writer doing? What is the writer forcing me to look at? And what am I being you know, how being cajoled and managed, you know. And in this book, I really want people to think about it, not least by pointing to the fact that amazing coincidences and sort of too good to be true narrative happenings happen in history, in real life, as well as in stories.
We have about two or three minutes together, and I want to end here because I find it fascinating, which is that you have written the book about the Odyssey, of course, taught the Odyssey, and this book is exploring the challenges in writing that book about the Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And yet, in reading this book, I get the idea that you still, as much as you've thought about it, as much as you, for want of a better term, have obsessed over it, it still remains somewhat mysterious to you.
Yes. I think at the end of the day, you know, it reminds me of a joke that a publishing friend of mine said about bestsellers. He said, look, if we knew what made a bestseller, every book would be a bestseller.
Right.
And in a similar way, I think that's true of what you're asking here, which is, it's like Zeno's paradox. I feel each book I'm getting closer to figuring out what enchants us about a good story, but I'm never quite getting there, and I have to keep writing another book to sort of ponder the question from a different angle.
Can you read, for example, Homer's Odyssey for the pleasure without it being a puzzle?
I think, you know, such a great question. I think it's a matter of temperament. You know, I'm a critic, and it's almost impossible for me to read something, to watch a TV show, to look at a movie without instantly trying to figure out the mechanics. And then, you know, obviously many people aren't that way. But for me personally, I think that's the critical stance, right? Is you're always wondering what's going on behind the curtain. And that doesn't make enjoying the story impossible, not at all. But it's like having bifocals, right? You're seeing in two different ways at the same time.
Right. You know? In my case, trifocals, and it's a bitch. Yeah.
Or progressive.
Exactly. Maybe, you know? Exactly, Daniel. Well, the book could not be more fascinating and exquisite. It is. It's called Three Rings, a tale of exile, narrative, and fate. A Tale of Exile, Narrative, and Fate. The book is published by University of Virginia Press. Daniel, I can't thank you enough for being on the program. It's always a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me again. I really enjoyed it.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the new book is Three Rings, A Tale of Exile, Narrative, and Fate by Daniel Mendelsohn. The book is published by University of Virginia Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.